Hey guys, this is Seth Porges from Class Action Park on HBO Max. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hey everybody, welcome on back. Thank you for listening to Verbal Shenanigans Podcast. I'm Scott, that is Mike. We're back. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing well. A little tired, ton of walking during that last vacay. So, averaging about 13 miles a day doing that stuff.
13 miles a day?
10 to 13, yep.
Jesus. Well, first off, where'd you go?
Places.
What do you mean? You went so 13 miles a day. Did you guys hike the Appalachian Trail?
Well, I mean, not really. It was more like a park.
Did you? A national park. Did you go to Yosemite or Yellowstone?
More corporate owned kind of park.
Ah, like you went and did like a baseball stadium trip, and you went to like all the different baseball parks.
A lot less manly than. Yeah.
Mike Berlow, fresh off of his 900th Disney trip in the last 4 years.
Yeah.
Mike, the 50th anniversary. How was your super spreader? 50th anniversary at Disney.
Yeah, it was good. We met up Izzy met her best friend, who is the person who's a Disney travel planner that she usually goes to. She is married to a guy I used to work with at my old job. So we had a nice time adult-wise and all, doing different things and all, had some adult conversations and beverages and stuff like that. And then there was... Wait.
I like that you at 40-something years old just said, we had a nice time doing adult things and having adult conversations.
Yeah. It wasn't just all, Mickey, kind of things.
That must be like a relief for you. Like, oh, I could have a beer and talk about sports.
Yeah. It was nice to have like kind of like that extra person there to kind of just say, oh, man, hey, I can actually talk about football. Nice. All right.
Do you like football?
What's up?
Remember that episode of The Simpsons where like Homer meets the president? It's like President Carter, and they're like, "Do you like
Gerald Ford?"
Gerald Ford,
do
yeah.
Do you like football?
yeah.
And it was all around pretty nice. The 50th itself, it was jam packed there, and basically 95% of the people there worried about getting merchandise and getting in food lines for like special popcorn buckets. So like we went to a figure, all right, I'm not getting on a ride. Literally nobody cared about the rides whatsoever. We were just walking on to them. But if you're like, hey, I feel like a soda, well, that's a 2-hour wait.
No.
Yeah. They were all caring about, dude, just missed it. And all, there was basically a fist fight in the store because of the 50th anniversary tumbler that apparently two women went for the last one and neither of them liked it, and it was basically fist thrown and to have them get ejected from the park, and to find out they're on sale at Disney.com 2 days later.
It's
like, do you really think Disney literally only made like 100 of these to make you happy and feel special when they can sell a million of them and make buku bucks?
Yeah, because Disney's never not tried to merchandise things before.
Never, not a single thing.
Yeah, so this is definitely like my first main question. So it's the 50th anniversary. Like, I hear 50th anniversary, I hear Disney World, I'm thinking 8 billion people. Like, just a lot of people.
I had to guess. I mean, it wasn't like when it was spent, like when the wife went in for shopping, when we stayed at the end of the park for their new spectacular fireworks show. Yeah, it is like shoulder to shoulder. Like if you get like anxiety from not being able to move, you're going to feel that. But like throughout most of the other park, like you said,
no different than normal.
I literally like Space Mountain, 5 minutes to get on it all day long on the biggest event. Like I said, everybody was so worried about the material that they basically didn't even blink an eye to it.
So it was like almost everyone going for the special souvenir that was there and then forget about the actual theme park.
Oh, yeah. They, because everything now, do you... from that day is being sold. Like, they gave away like a free poster to people there, and there was a special map. Oh, it was the same map, but it says 50th anniversary on it. It's going on eBay for like $70. And of course, my wife's like, well, I can't sell it. I'll give it to a friend. I'm like, yeah, you could pay for it. Like, if you sold those, then I would be less worried about the next time you want to go.
Now, do you think this was like the majority of the crowd might have been like the season pass kind of people, and they're like, well, we got to come in and get our crap and then get at it. Like, we don't care about the other stuff. We're here all the time.
It's hard to say because I know that like when all this stuff happened, they quote unquote said, well, we're capping how many people who are pass holders can come in at a certain time and how many tickets we sell. But they never make an official announcement like, on this day, we're only going allowed to have X amount of people in the building. So, it was increased, but it wasn't crazy because, like, they, after 2 o'clock, that's when they allow certain people, if you have a pop park hopper pass, to go in, and they weren't stopping anybody who would like bought a ticket for Epcot and then came over to Disney. They weren't saying, no, we're at capacity. They let people in. So it was not as insane as I thought it'd be. I will say one interesting story, as I said, like shoulder to shoulder getting ready for the fireworks show. Like we had to stand in one spot for close to 2 hours to wait for the show. And there was a moment, it's like, so I'm standing on concrete or asphalt, whatever you want to call it. So the back is acting up a little
bit. No. In Disney, those are called magical rock mixture.
Oh.
Yeah.
Sorry, I forgot you're an expert on on street life down in
Disney. Yes, yes.
But,
yes.
So, like, the back is acting up a little bit. I'm like, all right, I'm going to just stretch a little. And I had my backpack in my hand. And, you know, I raised my arms. I'm trying to, like, get any vertebrae moved and stuff like that. And a random guy pats me on the back. And I turn around. And he's like, are you going to keep your backpack over your head for the entire time when the fireworks start? And it's one of those questions that's like so awkward, weird. Like I couldn't even come up with a sarcastic or funny answer. Like I literally had locked jaws. I stared at the guy thinking, are you serious? As we're like probably 50 minutes away from the fireworks, that this is a serious concern of his.
That's where you should have rolled into it and been like, you know what? I am gonna try to hold my backpack over my head the entire show.
My magical friend, Backpacky, wants a good view of the fireworks. He's my special friend. You might have seen him on Disney Junior. You know, Backpacky, the great backpack.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we're going to celebrate together. 50th
now,
friend.
This shoulder-to-shoulder thing to me sounds like, it reminds me of like New Year's Eve. And like that always looked like something I would never want to do.
Yes, it's something I never want to do, and I can at least say it was limited to moments where I wasn't a disaster, and it was literally just for that one day, so it wasn't like my entire week of just like being unable to move. Like my biggest thing is like when I get freaked out when I like take a step and somebody's just like cuts me off, or they kind of like slow down where I get over anxious and I'm like stomping my feet a little bit to kind of let them know.
Yeah, that's how the first three women died.
No. I keep on telling you those accusations have never been proven in court, Scott.
Well, you know, we know the truth here on the show, but well, I digress. So, we talked a lot about this on our last episode because you were just about to leave, actually, like a day or two afterward. Let's break down some of the Mike and his wife classics for the for your Disney vacations. So, okay. What was your outfit situation like? Usually, your wife plans you all sorts of interesting outfits.
I noticed
you had ears.
Nothing had too crazy. Yeah, there's some pictures where the special 50th anniversary ears, I wore them in some photos. I mostly wore caps most days and just some sort of like Disney-esque shirt. For Animal Kingdom, that was a little extra outfit where Izzy was Cruella and she got me a Dalmatian shirt, so yep. There was that.
Yep, and that's the one I wanted to talk about for a second.
Okay.
Now, we've seen the Dalmatian shirt for something else. I forget what it was. Probably some kind of doggy run
like
or something.
Dog run or something like that.
I just like listening to you now, because now it's just like, yeah, I had to wear that costume for that race. And oh, no, that was last year. Like, it's piled up so much that you can't decipher what actually happened anymore. You just kind of gone into a fugue state.
It's like reading an encyclopedia. Like, everything is in there. You're just trying to reference certain points. You can't specifically say everything. But you're like, okay, that sounds familiar.
So, I noticed the dog shirt, but I really wanted to focus on the dog hat, Mike.
Okay.
I believe it said, I don't have it in front of me, but I believe it said, more Disney, more dogs.
Yeah, that's an older hat. You've seen it before. Like, you brought this up before.
I have? Well,
yes,
see,
you have.
See, this it's even becoming my life now. I can't keep track.
See, that's why like Izzy's like, "Oh, Scott's going to make so fun of you when you get back to the podcast." I'm like, it's like a Tuesday. It's just another day.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah, I mean,
we got well past the oh man, what's he going to bring up this week?
Yeah, we've got way past the acceptance part of this in your life. Now we just know what. Now we're more just looking into the future where it builds to. We've already accepted that we've lost you a long time ago.
Yeah, I miss old Mike. He was a cool guy and all. He had that glass head with the beads in and the glasses.
If I could think of old Mike, let's think of old Mike. Okay, old Mike. Let's see. Interesting decor in the house.
Yeah.
Kind of like a no shit's given kind of decor. Like, I'm just going to have a glass head with beads on it, and then I'm going to have, like, my NASCARs and my Redskin stuff.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Old Mike. Old Mike hated photos.
Yes.
Did not like to take photos. Now, this is where I always am interested in your mindset, because your wife always has a couple hundred photos per vacation. A lot of posed photos. You got photos of a Tinkerbell in your hand. You got photos of her doing the Force thing to you 27 times in a row.
She loves that one.
Yeah.
Like, every time she's like, we'll be in like Hollywood Studios. That's where the Star Wars land is. And they'd be like, all right, done. And she'll be like, can I request one more item? And I'm kind of like, don't you, like, after the first one, like, what do you think? I'm going to have, like, crazy calf muscles where I'm going to be, like, 20 feet in the air. And they'll be like, oh, my God, this is the most amazing photo ever.
Yeah. Like, I think you at this point have just been, there's got to be a switch now that you have been able to just turn off when you go to Disney or places like that, and you're just like in pilot mode, like, okay, I'll do all the pictures, does it ever get to you anymore?
That's a good question. I mean,
Like, is there ever days where you're like, I don't give a shit about these ears, and this place can go suck my ass? Like, do you ever have, like, little meltdowns?
I don't. The most I get is aggravated when it's, like, something like, all right, we're going to go do something I want to do. And it's like, oh, there's a picture of a...
Yeah.
What possible photo could be over there that we do not have 80
Yeah, that's
right now, where we can't just go to my thing, turn around, and come back to that. That's something that will kind of, like, burn me up, and where it's just like, all right, we just did 20 of your things, let me go do my one thing. And it's like, wait! And it's like, no,
yeah.
I don't want to wait.
Yeah.
I want to do my thing, and we'll go back to the next 40 things you want.
Now, last week you had told us that you were going to build a droid.
Yeah, that got postponed.
Oh, no!
And the reason for that was I started looking at the bills, and I had a heart-to-heart where I'm like, okay. Because the big spend of this was...
I thought you were going to say them.
Pass holders.
So does that mean you can go anytime?
Pretty much, yeah. You got to reserve a day, but it's pretty much... Like, we got the... When you're out of state, you have to get the most expensive one. So, it's the one with... They can't tell you no unless, like... Okay, we literally... 40,000 people already said they were coming today. You can't do that. But,
yeah, I'm sure those are cheap. Probably, like, $75.99 each, you know?
No. think about four digits... Per.
Four yeah. per?
Yeah.
Wow.
Now
I was like ballpark, I was gonna say like $750. That was gonna be my guess.
$1,299.
Damn.
Now I can at least say with the math, considering I'm going there regardless, it will be in our bank account's favor.
Well,
for once.
No, well.
All the add-ons will not be the favor.
The add-ons, maybe if you didn't go there 12 times a year, then you wouldn't have to spend that money.
Well, it's not even like going 12 times. You got every day is about, I think the average price is $160, $170, like that. So... Like you go for 5 days, it's like, yes, all right.
But you've by doing that, you have also signed a contract that, well, now we have to go multiple times within the year.
Scott, didn't we discuss what I declared before and where I'm at right now?
Right. Old Mike.
Did the contract thing even be a concern anymore at this point?
Now, when you said no to building a droid, was it like, was it like telling your kid like they couldn't have ice cream at the party? Like, were you like, was it a disappointing moment?
I alluded to it, and she's the one who came back with, okay, since we had this and we'll be back many times, then we will do it. And now it makes sense where it's like, so we're going to be doing like the marathon runs over there. So now it's like, okay, if I don't want to go into a park after I just ran 13.1 miles, but maybe we go in to have a nice lunch, build a droid, sightsee, go back to the hotel.
I thought you were going to say, that got postponed because of the microchip shortage. Maybe that's why you couldn't build a droid.
Yeah, they put it all the COVID vaccines. It's very limited right now. Be careful, ladies and gentlemen.
It'd be great if the droid was just going around vaccinating people.
You know? You just see some kind. Every time in the hall of presidents, somebody cheers when Trump comes up. That droid just comes zooming in. No, not again!
Pew, 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 pew! Just jabbing them with Pfizer every couple minutes.
Get away from me, BB-8!
I guess my we always have to ask this now that you... You know, now that every 3 weeks we do a Disney episode,
pretty much.
Where you always encounter some interesting people Oxygen Lady being my personal favorite, those just listening now. Oxygen Lady was a lady that basically was in front
of us in line.
Yeah, cut Mike in line with her oxygen tank and apparatus. And her and Mike got into a little...
She yelled at Izzy, like when we went through, we're in line, and this is when there's the 6 feet stickers on there. We came across like a corner where it was kind of weird, and then she's like, ma'am, you stay away.
Yeah.
Which kind of triggered Izzy, where she was upset, and I told her, go ahead to the next step, and I waved for Oxygen Lady to circle around the corner so I can give her a death look. And then after she saw the way I looked at her, I did not see Oxygen Lady after that.
And then he also forgets to mention, he slowly turned her nozzle to the left. No, to the right. Righty-tighty.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
That's still one of my favorite images, be like, shh. Like, you just... It'll be over soon. just tightening up. So, any interesting interactions or people this time, other than the backpack question?
Not really. The more interesting thing was from a different story. The woman who had us cut lines and claimed anxiety.
There's
and
so many stories. I can't keep track of them anymore.
So that girl, like, after that trip, like, Izzy didn't want to really part, because there was a lot of stuff where, like, even the way she wasn't, like, parenting her kids and wouldn't do anything. She cries poverty. Meanwhile, she'll talk about her $10,000 wedding dress.
Didn't her kid lick your ice cream cone?
Mimosa.
Yeah. In the height of COVID.
Yeah, literally, as it, like... What was that, like mid-2020? Yeah. So she did not want to have any part to do with her. But so I put up my promotion for Pumpkin Spice Whatever.
Hmm.
And I think I brought up on the show before, I really don't like unfriend people or do blocking or stuff like that. It's not my personality. It's very rare I do that. So she wasn't blocked, so then she messaged me directly and say, oh, that's cool,
I dropped my ukulele
in Magic Kingdom on the first, and I'm gonna be in Epcot on the second. So we spent the first and the second just keeping an eye out so we wouldn't bump into her.
Jeez.
So like that was like no close calls, nothing like that. But it was just something that was like, oh my God, what I do. And it's like, you just go with a friend and you walk away from the person. I don't know what to tell you.
What was the level of people in jazzies driving around in their hover rounds?
Oh, there was a good amount. there was a real good amount.
Like a biker, biker weekend. Like,
easily. Yeah. Easily. And I know, what was it? It was one of the Star Wars rides where the walkthrough actually was ramps and not stairs, so they send the scooter people through there, and we were like behind one woman who was trying to, I guess this is her first time using the scooter, she was trying to figure out, so there was always a moment where she thinks it stops and then it starts creeping back towards us, beeping, and she's like, ah! I mean, she was a kind lady, so I'm not gonna rag on her, but that was kind of interesting.
Yeah. Now, do people in their jazzies and their hover rounds, do they decorate them as like Disney props?
I don't know. I don't recall seeing it. Like, they'll be in their whole Disney clothing and so forth, because I think they pretty much rent it from Disney, so you don't even have the time to prepare it.
See, I was thinking, how we interviewed that guy from Magic Wheelchair? How they like design wheelchairs for how I was picturing like people in their hover rounds as like
no, like nobody's going around in the Chippendale Rescue Ranger mobile throughout the park.
Well, that's a shame. I mean, if they're gonna go, let people go as far as they go, they might as well, you know, build the jazzies up. But last question, Mike. You got your Disney out of your system. You know, it's you guys had a great time, had a good little vacation. You're back. You know, in a couple years, when you guys go back, you know.
I noticed you said the word years.
Yeah, yeah. What's wrong with that?
Use the word that begins with the letter D, as in days.
Days?
About 29 days. We're Jesus back Christ. For the Disney.
Bro, look, this races. Is twice in a month. You're going twice in a month. You well, got so back we yesterday.
Got there, we got there in September. We left there in October. We got a race in November. We got another set of races in January. Then February, we're going to California to meet up with friends. So by rule,
it's Disney.
Disneyland is in there.
Yep.
I think I heard words about April is another race. I don't know. So right now, technically, December's not there, but I may visit my dad.
Your wife's
in December,
master.
So by rule, we're passing there.
Your wife's master plan is working. I think she got you into running, and now she slowly was like, if I just keep putting races near Disney World or in Disney World, he can't say no. So her master plan is working well.
Yeah, I mean, Thanos was not this planning genius that my wife is. Yeah. I literally just worry that one day she will get that glove, snap her fingers, and then somehow we're there twice as many days in a year. She'll expand the year and double the days.
She'll just snap her fingers and just wake up on it's a small world every day. Where
There's
we get him?
Double July? What?
Listen, this all escalates to you guys putting a for sale sign on the house and moving right outside the Disney park. This is where it all goes.
Yeah. Like she brought up I want to work there when I retire, and I started laughing. I'm like, "Oh, we'll have enough money to retire. That's intriguing." I wonder how that works.
I don't think would you like I feel like that would like even if you're so into something, the minute you start to work there, it becomes a very different thing.
I think she would work well in there. You know her personality. Yeah. Like her place.
Oh, Mickey, are you sick? Make sure to hydrate and take a Tylenol if you're not feeling well.
Listen, I came here for Daisy Duck. Why is a nurse running around trying to hug me? I don't understand.
Oh, Gaston, did you hurt your bicep lifting? Make sure to rest it for 5 days.
Interesting you bring up Gaston. There was a video out there drunk woman that touches chest, and he's literally like, get the hell out of the park.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I saw that, and I thought like maybe there was like a little bit before video that we didn't see. I thought he reacted pretty quick. I thought he was pretty quick to be like, no, get the hell out of here. Maybe he just had a bad day.
I mean, at the end of the day, nobody has a right to touch you if you don't want to be touched. So,
but if you're Gaston, there's a little touching that's allowed. A little.
Imagine that going to court and all it's like, listen, Gaston wants to get touched, Your Honor. You know that for a fact. I got Beauty and the Beast one. I got Beauty and the Beast two, where he come back somehow.
Yeah, listen,
clearly,
Your Honor,
he wants that chest touch.
Your Honor, do you see Daisy Duck, Mickey, Pluto, any of them filing any complaints against me? Didn't touch him once, but he's Gaston. Come on.
Listen, why do you think he eats those 4 dozen eggs every morning? Yeah. Huh?
I mean,
to get big and strong, to get his chest touched.
I mean, I basically broke this down with you and your wife via text like a week ago. Gaston, really cheap, kind of cheesy looking outfit, ponytail, jacked to the gills. He's definitely like a male stripper. Like, he's got a male stripper vibe to him.
Like, if Disney just like sold to like Hustler, it'd be the perfect matchup.
He'd be the first adaptation of the like the dark Disney movies. No one dances
it like Gaston.
Put your dollar bill on Gaston. You're telling me when we performed at Hunkamania 10 years ago or whatever it was, if there was a guy that came out as Gaston, he wouldn't get raucous applause from those ladies?
I think it would just be normal. Mm-hmm. Like, we would just go up stage. Nobody would be like, well, that's a special costume. Everybody would just be like, nope.
Yeah. I'm not convinced that, like, if we stayed 10 minutes later, they wouldn't be like, Gaston, Gaston, Gaston. And, like, they knew it was coming. Like, that was part of the show.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Clearly, the only way you transition from Johnny Watson to a strip show is Gaston.
That's correct. That is correct. But, well, you're back, Mike, and, you know, I'll look at the calendar and see where you're not available with the podcast and know where you're at. But
so far, there is no Wednesdays that I am gone at the moment.
Okay, okay, good. Can you get Stripper Guest on as a guest if you're down there next time?
I got to think that line is long to get Stripper Guest
on. Here's a brilliant business idea.
Okay.
Just outside of Orlando in like a seedier area, just open up like a Disney-themed strip club for like all the men who are miserable about their family or the women, and just have all Disney-themed strippers there that are just, you know, there.
My Lord. That'd be so sad. And you just have to, it would be the same name, but you only have to change like one letter. Yeah.
Like Aston, Aston, Daisy, yeah. Daisy Fuck.
Ariel Olas.
Yeah. Areolas, yeah. But Mike, who we got on the show today?
Well, not Stripper Gaston. I'm sorry to hear that. But
damn it.
Today, I know, one day. But we got a great one here. We're going to be talking with Seth Porges, who is a writer, a director, and he just came out with possibly my favorite documentary in recent times.
It was good.
Class Action Park, which is the whole story of the amusement park in Vernon, New Jersey, notorious for injuries, deaths, and the most insane stories humanly possible. I will, if you're not sure what Action Park is like, all I have to say is there was a ride with little bumper tanks that shot tennis balls.
Yes.
And some guy poured gasoline on them and set on fire and was shooting fire tennis balls at people. And that's just a normal day at Action Park. So we're going to be talking with Seth about making the movie and just laughing about the history of this place.
Yeah. I remember like them advertising the slingshot, and essentially they put you in a slingshot and just fired you across into like some mats or something like that were placed somewhere. But, yeah. Yeah,
and people are listening are like, that's insane. And people in New Jersey is like, yep.
Yeah, that's what we do. Yep. That's what we did.
Yep.
But let's get Seth Porges on the line.
So, Seth, I mean, looking back at everything with your knowledge of pinballs, all the tech work and all the shows you worked on, bad that all I want to talk to you about is people getting their faces ripped off in Vernon, New Jersey.
No, because all I want to talk about is Action Park too, guys. So we're on the same page. That's the thing about this topic. Like, immerse yourself in it for years and you still just wake up in the morning and shake your head and you go like, what the hell, man?
Yeah.
Like, what the hell, you know? It doesn't get old. If it hasn't gone old for me, it hopefully won't for anybody.
Yeah, especially like I spent most of my life in Jersey. Scott still lives in New Jersey. Anytime Action Park, it's that badge of honor. Like, people want to look at you know, the Jersey Shore and describe, oh, that's the pinnacle of New Jersey. It's like, no. The stories that come from Action Park, that's a New Jerseyan. And
yeah. Yeah, I mean, New Jersey, you guys, I'm sure, from the area, like, grew up reading Weird New Jersey and stuff like that. Like New Jersey's a weird place.
Yes.
And it's got all these things that you could just, like, hone a microscope in on and be like, that's crazy. You know, I mean, from Sopranos up north to Atlantic City down south and everything in between. I mean, New Jersey is the most folklore, urban, legendy, weird place that has ever existed. And I think a lot of people might see this one little bit of that weirdness and you know, extrapolate all of New Jersey's Snooki or something like that. All of New Jersey's Tony, all of New Jersey's Chris Christie, when it's like, no, oh, New Jersey's got a lot of weird stuff going on and like good weird stuff. Like New Jersey's a fun place to spend time and explore.
So where did you grow up? Like,
I'm from DC. My dad's from New Jersey. He's from the New Brunswick.
Oh, okay.
Right smack in the middle. Yeah. So I grew up coming up there, and that's how I ended up at Action Park.
So let's take us back. When was your first encounter with the park?
Yeah, I probably only went to say twice in my life. Not that many times. I was young, really young, but I went to a bunch of amusement parks and theme parks growing up. We'd go to like Disney World every year. I'd go to Six Flags sometimes, King's Dominion in Virginia, Busch Gardens. We went to a lot. And very clear the second you step into Action Park that something is different about this place. You know, it's like one of those like brain teasers, like which of these things is not like the other, right? And what kind of fascinated me about Action Park as I got older was looking back at these memories. And when you go to an amusement park as a kid, it's really hard to separate what's real and what's kind of in story, what's imagineered, right? You go on a thrill ride and you're being presented as if you're doing something dangerous. And when you're a kid, you really buy into that. You feel the spookiness of the Haunted Mansion, for example. But only as you get older do you realize, wait, that's all fabricated. That's story. That's something that somebody wrote and created. That's a narrative. But at Action Park, that fear, that terror, that was all authentic. That was all real. And not until you're an adult looking back and really kind of comparing it to the Disney worlds and Universal Studios of the world, do I really think I understood just how different it was. And I had these memories that were so insane that I kind of like didn't even believe them. And that was a lot of what drove me down the pathway to making Class Action Park, to making the movie, was really trying to explore my own memories and figure out what was real, what was urban legend, what could possibly have been real that I saw there.
How did you usually describe the park, like even pre this documentary? How would you describe it to your friends? Because I was unfortunate that my brother and sister are way older than me, got to go, and my parents heard the stories. Hence, they had to protect their little boy, unfortunately, where I didn't get that beautiful experience.
But yeah.
Do you start with, oh, it's awesome, or it starts with, let me show you this scar, let me show you this head injury?
Yeah, I mean, those things coexist, and that's what's so fascinating about the place. If it was cut and dry, like there's things in this world that are bad, there's things in this world that are good, and then there's things in this world like Action Park that you can't wrap your head around. The absurdity, the insanity, the fact that like these formative memories, these incredible experiences, this deep sense of nostalgia and awakening and youth can coexist next to serious tragedy and injury and even death. And that's what makes the place so unshakable and so fascinating. When I describe the park to people, I usually just bring up like Itchy and Scratchy Land in The Simpsons.
Yeah, you know? Right.
The most violentest place in the world. I mean, and really like Action Park to me felt like something plucked from a 7-year-old's imagination or something from The Simpsons or some like cartoon. It kind of feels like something like in Rick and Morty, you know, like some absurd thing where it's like, what if the rules of physics and the law and common sense just didn't apply and we could do anything we wanted, right? And that's what Action Park was. And as a kid, there's something incredibly magical for all. Also, like
we're losing you, Seth.
Yeah. What was that?
You're back.
Oh, you're back. Yeah, you froze there for a big.
Should we rewind a little?
Yeah. Tell us what you just said.
Well, where did I get cut off? Sorry about that.
You got cut off in the magicalness of Action Park.
Yeah, going to Action Park as a kid, and hopefully you guys will. I'm repeating myself weirdly, but going to Action Park as a kid, it really, there is something magical about walking into a place that feels like it's ripped from your 7-year-old imagination. Mm-hmm. You know, like you think to yourself, what kind of amusement park would I, as a child, design if I'm just doodling on my notebook margins and common sense doesn't apply, physics, laws, and God and man don't apply? What would I make? What would I do? What would I explore? What would I ride on? And Action Park was that ever existed.
So you had a background in journalism and and working at Maxim and things like that. Were you at this point, were you interested in making documentaries? Were you always dabbling in film? When did that crossover happen for you?
Yeah, you know, I'm always interested in telling stories, whatever format, you know, works best, whatever story that is. You know, I first approached the Action Park story, you know, more than 10 years ago. You know, I wrote a couple articles briefly talking about it for Popular Mechanics, where I used to work, and some other places. I just became like really interested, especially as I started to realize, as I was a journalist, how little journalism existed about this place, how little actual reporting and research existed, how much of what was out there in the world was urban legend, was these campfire stories that were being passed around. And I was like, well, wait, I should look into this, right? I started looking into this, and eventually made a doc short, really just a web video. I don't think it's fair to call it a doc short, with my friends Matt and Anthony. And that went online and went pretty viral and ended up causing the park to change its name back to Action Park in 2014, which was high flattery, really, really cool. And it really spread out there, I believe, because so little about Action Park that actually felt like the reporting was out there, but also all these people who are going to the park had a similar experience that I did, where they had all these memories that they would tell people as they got older and nobody would believe them. And so they passed around this video as kind of proof, like, hey, look, I told you this stuff was real. And, you know, that was like 7 or 8 years ago I made that video. Took me a while to kind of figure out how to make it into a feature doc, and eventually did, with obviously credit goes to my co-director Chris as well, of course, for that.
When you're building this documentary with all the childhood memories, how did you kind of balance the kind of the funniness of the, oh my God, I can't believe this really occurred in life, versus the seriousness of it, as people have actually got seriously injured and some people actually died in that park?
Yeah, that's a really important question when you're talking about Action Park, because it is a place that is both super absurd and just quantifiably hilarious when you like think about, but then also a place that people did lose their lives and many, many more people were injured. And really, you know, I think the way we approached it was sort of modeled after my own journey of understanding of that. You know, when I first started looking back at my memories and then writing about and then even making my short, I was approaching it from this place heavily coated with nostalgia colored lenses of absurdity and of hilarity. And this place is wild. And it's because I had not, and I don't believe any other journalists really had gotten close to the people who were actually injured. And we didn't really understand the real tragedy as at the center of that. And as we made this film, and as I got to know people like the Larson family and other people who were actually injured there, I began to look back at my previous attitude about the park, my previous feelings about the park, my previous laughter about the park, and really feel a sense of shame, a sense of like, what was I laughing at? And I felt that that journey, that transition was really, really powerful. And I wanted to kind of recreate that with the film, where people would be feeling that sense of levity and absurdity and hilarity that I felt before the truth sort of hit them. And I think that's really the only way to approach this park, because if you just start approaching it like a serious true crime show or like a 60 Minutes documentary, you're missing the point. It's not clear to be, like, the big point isn't that people got hurt here. It's why were people drawn to this first place? And I think that's the thing we really, really wanted to make clear. It's one thing to say this thing was dangerous. That doesn't answer the chief question, which is why did millions and millions of people going knowing it was dangerous? One of you guys just said, like, your family knew better than to take you there. This was no secret. Yet we, you know, as humans, something about us is drawn to this danger. And the owner of the park knew this. Gene Mulvihill knew this. He knew that every time a newspaper article came out about the injuries, it didn't keep people away. It drew them in. And that, to me, became the most fascinating thing about Action Park, not just from a journalism perspective, but from an emotional perspective, and from a, like, what does this say about us as humans perspective?
So when you took on the project, did you have that clear, concise meaning that you're telling us in that theme? Or was this something that kind of developed through the interviews and through the research and through the filming? And then you go, ah, okay, now I find the message in the movie.
Yeah, it was absolutely through the research and through the reporting and through the interviews. You know, I don't think it's right to approach a topic really pretending like you know exactly where it's going to go. what you're going to feel or what people are going to reveal to you. And we went into this with an open mind. We knew this was a topic that the true story hadn't been told. The full story hadn't been told. We knew there was a lot there, and we knew we'd be probably going to dark places that were only dark in an abstract sense to us when we began the project. And it's only once we were able to put kind of faces to some of the tragedy that we ourselves really began to feel this very deep conflict in our emotions. And right. I think that conflict, it wasn't fair to ignore that conflict. I think it was important for us to make clear that this is a place that people knew was dangerous, yet still they went, what does that say about us? And that to me became kind of what the film was about.
What was the one story that you found, my God, this is, I knew Action Park, but I didn't know it had a new layer.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much that, there's a lot of stuff that just wasn't in the film because we only have so much time, right? I mean, and a lot of stories that only kind of came to life after the movie came out, and then people start just saying more. But, you know, one of the things about the park that's really kind of interesting is that all of many of which were not safe in the first place. For many of them, the employees had ways of plussing them up, shall we say, operating them in even more extreme and even more unsafe ways. And oftentimes they would allow patrons to ride the rides in that way if they gave them like $20 or something like that. So the Alpine Slide, which was this, you know, toboggan, you know, go down this, it's asbestos mostly, but kind of looks like a concrete track. And this is where many people lost their skin. Many people lost their skin. Hundreds of they lost their skin. It was already a pretty dangerous ride, but the employees had special white carts that they would file down the wheels so they would go extra fast, extra speedy. And that's what they would use. And if you were, you know, if you knew and you slept an employee $20, they let you ride one. Even things like the cliff dive, which is already, it's not innately dangerous, but it's kind of crazy. Well, there were trees at the top of that cliff dive, and employees and some patrons would climb an extra 20 feet. And I have photos of this, of somebody standing on top of a tree at the top of the cliff dive, adding an extra 20 feet to their jump and then jumping in, right? And just the fact that, like, you have these things that are inherently unsafe that people are looking at and are saying, how can I make this even more unsafe?
Yeah.
But in terms of like stories that are in the film, the one that really dropped my jaw when I heard it was when a former employee, who's now actually the owner of the park as it happens, told us a story about Gene Mulvihill pretending to murder somebody with a cattle prod. And I just couldn't believe he was telling us this. It was like this, and I mean, it tells you so much about the owner of the park's personality, I think, that he thought this was a good idea to try to murder somebody with a cattle prod so that people who saw this murder occur would know that you shouldn't skip the lines at the ski lift or else you too might be murdered. What a deterrent.
Now, when you have you been to what is now Mountain Creek? Like, it's interesting because there's still like the cliff jumping away and there's still like Tarzan. So, like, there's little pieces of it left, but it have you gone there and kind of been like, oh, like do you have to look back and kind of almost like picture like a graphic design of bringing it back down to Action Park? And I was also thinking, like, where do you stand on as far as like the park being closed? Do you wish they were able to kind of adapt it and keep the name, or are you like, okay, that place had to go?
Well, I think in terms of going to Mountain Creek these days, and I've, you know, been of times in recent years. I mean, the people who run the park are awesome these days. First, got to say that it's not the same ownership. People who operate now operate it very safely, I believe, and very professionally. It's really cool to walk the park and sort of see the ghosts. You know, it does have that feeling of history. And in the end of the movie, we kind of show some modern footage of the park. And I think it really kind of emotionally close the loop to some degree when you see these things 30 years ago in archival home movies and then you see them today, you're like, wow, that's still there, right? And there's a weirdness to a lot of what the park is now. Like, the Colorado River ride is still there, but when you ride it today, you have to wear a full face mask, like a catcher's mask or a lacrosse mask, because so many people are smashing their heads.
Oh, wow.
And so it's just kind of interesting to see the ways the park is adapted, because a lot of these rides that are still there are kind of just say grandfathered in, you know,
right.
A lot of the park was built as, you know, things are prototypes, experimental. These weren't off the rack rides. They were crazy ideas that were kind of early stages in the evolutionary tree of what would become a modern water park. And so you have these like early vestigial rides that are still there, and figuring out how do you operate them safely in modern times. It's really interesting to see what things stuck around, what things were changed, what things were nerfed a little.
Yeah.
But it's also just honestly a really beautiful park as far as water parks go. I think when people think of water parks, they think of like a parking lot with some towers and some water slides. Yeah. And Action Park's built into a wooden
It's very mountain. Nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's really got the sense of nature to it. And Vernon's a beautiful area. You know, it is still a ski resort in the winter. It's probably best known these days for its downhill mountain biking is sort of a destination in that world. But I love going to Mountain Creek. I think, you know, as much as we can look back nostalgically at Action Park and love to represent the people, I think to some degree it's a good thing that a lot of what Action Park was is no longer around. And I think a name is a name. You know, it doesn't matter if it's called Action Park. It doesn't matter if it's called Mountain Creek. I'm glad it's being operated safely. And I'm also glad you can look back at some of these attractions with a sense of memory to them.
It's kind of weird as I rewatched it before this, and it was a great movie. I highly recommend everybody, HBO Max, go out and see it. It's kind of interesting with everything that you've done with like different writing and stories and stuff like that. When something comes out, I almost think back to, we've had some interviews with some like child stars where they get like stereotyped or typecasted into that role. With this being such a success, are you almost worried you're going to be typecasted as somebody's like, okay, now talk about the deaths that happened at Great Adventure?
Yeah,
you know, it's funny you say that. No, I'm not concerned. First of all, I love talking about Action Park. I'll never get sick of it. I think, you know, you see, I'm not an actor. You see actors maybe did roles when they're younger and they're kind of, oh, I don't want to be that guy from Star Trek anymore or whatever it is. And you see some who just love their old stuff. I'm the guy, I love Action Park. I love my movie and everybody I worked on it with. I really don't. I'm just an incredible team of collaborators, a very small team of collaborators. But you know what? I think Action Park as Class Action Park as a movie, I don't think it's going to, and some of the stuff I'm working at right now, hopefully confirms that. I wish I could talk more, but I don't think it's going to lead to that because it is a movie that has disparate emotions to it, shall we say. It's a movie that has levity and lightness and humor and has tragedy to it. And I think when people get typecast, it's less often related to subject matter and more to genre. And you know, we crafted a film that I think kind of skips between different emotional peaks and valleys in a way that I hope people can look at me and my collaborators and think that we can do other things as well.
Yeah. I mean, as Mike said, it is a great film. I mean, I know the reaction was great universally, but I know the reaction was fantastic, like locally, because I remember it coming out and all my like friends on Facebook being like, gotta watch this. This is great. Like, cause you know, it's everyone from Jersey is just like,
yeah,
we have to see this. Cause it, like you said, it's kind of like folklore in New Jersey. So I know the local market absolutely loved the movie.
Yeah. And they would have let me know if they didn't. That's the thing. You know, New Jersey's not going to lie to you. And people of Vernon aren't. And it was, and that to me, you know, those would have been my toughest critics. And we were warmly embraced by the people of Vernon when we've made the film. And the film itself was warmly embraced by them as well. And that means more to me than any, you know, critic review would.
Well, let's segue into, you know, Class Action Park is done. It's now made. It's watchable for forever. Mm-hmm. What are you working on now? Or what is the future for you?
Yeah, I got a bunch of stuff. I got to be a little vague about things that aren't out yet. So I'm going to skirt around just here. My follow-up,
gotcha.
My
next Avengers movie. Gotcha.
Next Avengers movie. I am making Black Panther 2. doing that. My next documentary, which is going to a major streaming service, that's all I can say.
Okay.
What I'll say is that if Class Action Park was my 80s movie, in many ways, sort of like an homage to the movies I think a lot of us grew up watching, E.T., Goonies, Breakfast Club, Stand By Me, those kind of movies. My next one is sort of a homage to 90s action movies. So think Point Break, Heat, films of Tony Scott, Michael Mann, Catherine Bigelow, Walter Hill, like those kind of movies. And I'm hoping to make a movie that feels as intense and suspenseful and present with, again, like a deep layer of emotion as any of those films might have.
Now, two interesting things I found looking up on you. One, it looks like you're not in this house anymore, but you were kind of famous for having like a tiny, it would almost look like a railroad car size house.
Yeah,
I still have New York.
Yeah, you'd recognize in my Zoom background if I was in the tiny house now, but I'm not. No, I have this tiny house and you can rent it on Airbnb. Feel free to. It's, yeah, pretty cool place.
Yeah, that's the thing he's got to promote. Don't watch Class Action. Yeah, yeah. Just go up to upstate New York. I got a very tiny house and you can rent it.
180 square feet and you can rent it for sure. You're welcome to stay anytime you're in the area. It's free.
But the second thing is it says you got an extensive knowledge and background in pinball. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, I'm, you know, we all have our obsessions, right? And sometimes they turn into movies like Action Park. Yeah. And sometimes they're just there. I weirdly, you know, I've just written about pinball quite a bit in its history, which is a very strange history, and give a number of lectures on it and sort of become like a go-to guy to be quoted in any article about pinball. And the thing that fascinates me, and I think fascinates a lot of people who discover it, is that pinball, despite being this game that people think of as very wholesome and vanilla and safe and like what could possibly be wrong about it, was in fact illegal in most of America many, many decades. And was viewed as villainous, wicked, satanic for decades. Yep. And I just am obsessed with this idea that something that we look at today, so non-threatening and harmless, could have been looked at so differently. You know, it becomes this, I think, really great mental exercise where it's like, what today are we scared of that in 30 years people are going to be like, why yeah. do you care? You know, and that's really what's fascinating to me about pinball.
Now, was there a pinball machine in the tiny house?
There would be no room for anything else if there was a pinball machine. I do have some in my normal house, though. So I do have some pinball machines in my not tiny house.
That's awesome.
It's an Airbnb. You don't get bed. It's an Airbnb because you sleep on the pinball machine.
You sleep under the pinball machine.
Yes. Yeah.
Just don't sit up quickly. You know, you hit your head. Yeah.
It's a classic KISS pinball machine. Cost me a lot. Please be careful with
it. Be careful. Don't. Yes.
Now, when you like the documentary world, we all know it's like a long grind to put documentaries together. And like, are you like when you're on with like Class Action Park and currently what your unnamed project that you're working on is like, do you get a timeline to work under, or is it like, is it kind of like you turn it in when it's done and then try to sell it to buyers?
Well, it depends what the project is, right. You know, like Class Action Park, Chris Scott, my collaborator, and I, we independently produced and filmed this movie, and then you know, ended up at HBO Max after we were done. You know, we made some changes and tweaks, but the movie was effectively done at that point. And so we weren't operating under anybody's timeline when we made the film, other than our own. But other projects, if you're working directly with a streamer or something like that, there might be some other timeline. But I think everybody really wants things to be done right rather than quick. And I think one of the great things about working with streaming services these days, as opposed to say like a traditional studio to theater release, is that you don't necessarily, you know, they're not going to announce a release date a year in advance and then you got to make that release date.
Right.
It's I think there's a little bit more freedom because they want you to do it right at the end of the day. And I think a lot of these the truth is, I mean, a lot of these streaming services are very artist and creator friendly.
They are.
And and they do give us a lot of control and say at times. And I think at the end of the day, they want what we want, which is make the best darn movie we can.
Well, Seth, we had a lot of fun chatting with you and everything. We're looking forward to the next project. Definitely want to get you back on when that project.
Sure.
More out to the public and all. Yeah. But, people want to find out what you're up to or see Class Action Park. Where can they go?
Or rent your Airbnb.
Or rent my Airbnb. let's do some pluggage here. Class Action Park is streaming on HBO Max. If you're like, I don't have HBO Max, sign up for a free 7-day trial, then cancel as soon as you watch HBO Max. so there's that. And while you're doing it, watch Succession too, because it's a really good show. You can find me on Twitter and everything at Seth Porges, sure, say hi. I'm, you know, very easy to reach. And yeah, you know, it's really been great chatting with you guys. I appreciate it.
Awesome. And final question, if there was one ride at Action Park you say bring back tomorrow, bring back my childhood, what would be the ride you'd want back?
So here's the thing. Objectively speaking, the most fun ride at Action Park is also the most dangerous, which is the Alpine Slide. It was the most fun ride in the world. Somebody said, here's the Alpine Slide, but we're going to give you a cart that actually is in good operating order, meaning the brakes work.
Yep.
And you're not going to track with some lunatic who's going to be going way too fast without braking. That's the ride I would do, because it is, objectively speaking, the most fun ride. It's also the most dangerous. And that, I think, sums up Action Park in a nutshell. People knew it was dangerous. They got hurt. You know, they went right back on it. And it had to be, like, how fun does something have to be for people to do it despite knowing that danger?
Yeah.
I think that tells you a lot about both the park and that ride.
Isn't that something to be said, though? Like, we may never see, like, something like that ever to happen again. Like, there is a nostalgia to it. Like, yeah, we know the risk, but, like, it's worth the fun, and it's worth getting some bumps and bruises to kind of have fun. Like, I don't think we'll ever see any investor or anybody putting together something that large that will be ever willing to take those risks ever again.
No, absolutely not. And yeah. I mean, it's not like they did back then, like the right. quote unquote investors. It was just a penny stock scam.
Like, yeah, it wasn't. Yeah, yeah.
it was what it was. I think that's why we're all very interested in the park, because it's a time capsule. It represents a time and a place that will never exist again. And I think there's both good and bad to that. Change is good. It's wistful. I think we have a tendency to look back at things, imagining them as being better than they were. And I think we have the right to, you know, like Action Park was the childhood of many, many, many people. And they have a right to hold on to those memories, to hold the place dear, just like people who got hurt there and perhaps lost loved ones there have a right to look at that place with scorn and view it as a place of tragedy. Both those things can do coexist, because it's messy and everything interesting and decent in this world is.
Love it. Seth, thank you so much for your time, man. Good luck with the new projects. Good luck with whatever you're creating. We're big fans here, so thanks so much.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Mike, Seth Porges.
Scott, as you're holding a special guest with you right now.
Yes, second guest today.
We will tell the audience who it is in a second, but let's say that special guest grows up and we find out the siblings of Action Park says, we just rebuilt the park. We found ways, we found loopholes, mm-hmm. we got it all done.
Right.
That little special guest goes, I want to go. Your response?
My response, I don't think, would be 100% negative. I think I would be like, all right, you're allowed to bring a friend and his father, and mm-hmm. I will also go to the park with you. And we will, if a ride looks too dangerous, we won't go on it. But the rides that look fun, I will take you on it. And my last response would be, don't tell mom.
Ah, yeah. That's the smartest part about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. Like, I think of the Action Park thing. I kind of alluded to that in that last question I asked him, or last statement. It's kind of sad in a way, right? Like, it's kind of like almost this little, like, slice of, like, Americana where you did anything. It reminded me almost like Woodstock, the original. You know what I mean? Like, they mm-hmm. tried to recreate it, and they did a little bit with the 95 one, and it was the mud, and it seemed pretty fun. And then they tried to do it again in 2000, and it was just an absolute disaster, and they were burning things down. And so it reminded me of that little, like, it's a little sad because that kind of like, hey, we're going to do it. Yeah, there's a little bit of danger. You might get hurt, and people not caring as much, and, like, the lawsuit thing being out there all the time, like, kind of before all that. And it's kind of sad that we're never going to see a lot of those type of things again.
Yeah, yeah, and it's so funny how when you grow up and you hear the stories, you don't blink an eye, because, like, one of the funniest things and what led me to get Seth on here, like, I got excited when I realized, oh, dang, this is on HBO Max and I have it. So, like, one night, Izzy tells me...
I'm sorry, if you hear some rattling in my mic, it's because my 11-month-old son is just smacking the pop filter every 3 seconds. So, yeah, he's sitting on my lap. His mom just gave him to me and said, I got to go do some wash. Here you go. But continue, Mike. So if you hear, I don't have like a child trapped underneath the, you know, the mixer or whatnot. I just have my baby on my lap.
I'm going to put up my fingers, do the quotation marks and say allegedly.
Yeah, well, we're an audio podcast, so no one can see that.
Well, that's why I declared what I just did there. But it was funny. Like, I got excited when and Izzy's like, you know, I think I'm falling asleep. You can put on whatever. And I'm like, oh, I'm going to put this on. And I guess Izzy did not, even though growing up in New Jersey, did not know the history of Action Park. So when they're starting to tell these stories, like, she's, like, it's hilarious how she's freaking out. Like, she looked at the water slide with
the loop
in it. She's like, what the hell? And then it's like, yeah, you know, they open it up and they found teeth in the padding or whatever. She's like, this is freaking me out. I'm going to dream about this. I don't want to do it. And I was laughing so hard hearing from somebody who didn't know the history.
Yeah.
That's where I mainly went, I'm like, who wrote this? I'm getting them on the show. That's it.
You know how they say, like, there's certain memories, like, people, like, when an event is so big or so special that people say they were there when they weren't, like, mm-hmm. like, they almost, it almost becomes part of your, like, subconscious because you've seen the event and the coverage and the stories about it. That's how I feel with Action Park. Like, I, you know, I've been to Mountain Creek a bunch of times, and, like, I also remember all the commercials and, like, my brother's friends talking about mm-hmm. Action Park. And it was almost like I was there, but I was never there. Like, I never got to go. And I remember, like, my parents back to me, like, oh, no, you're not going to, you know, there's no Action Park. That's not happening. Like, but for some reason, I feel like I've subconsciously, like, went to there. And I don't know if that makes any sense, but, like, that's kind of how it felt. It's weird.
It's weirdly, like, in deep in your heart. It's almost like a popular show that you never watch. But the second you hear it gets canceled, you feel sad and you sit back and go, why am I sad? And I literally don't know any of these characters or anything about it.
Right.
You know?
Right. Like if you catch the last episode of a series that you didn't watch and it's like all like it's the end. It's like, I don't know. But yeah, there is something to that to me. Like, oh, it's just it's like it's kind of like the times of like kids playing stickball in the street is kind of over. Like, mm-hmm. You drive by a baseball park, you don't see any kids playing, like, you know, back in the day, if we had seven kids or whatever, we'd play three-on-three baseball, and you were only allowed to hit it to one side of the field. And we'd have, like, you'd have, like, a pitcher, a second baseman, mm-hmm. and an
outfielder.
Right fielder, yeah. And it was just, like, you don't see that anymore, this kind of, like, weird ingenuity kind of play, I guess. And that's kind of what I guess Action Park kind of, in my mind, that's kind of what it was.
It was the most loved place where you just knew it's like you want to go there, but a part of you doesn't want to go there. And it's just like the oddest combination because, like, I mean, Lord, every time you like, I remember when I got Callie originally.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, maybe I can run with her.
And you were like, I'm taking her to Action Park. And you're like, damn, it's closed.
But I was running with her and she was doing good. And then, like, out of blue, she cut in front of me where I had to stop. And we were running on in the parking lot. So I did that skid where my hands went out and I lost like a quarter of my skin on my hand.
Right.
And I remember that feeling of like, oh, this is the worst feeling on the plane. But there's something about hearing the story about the going down on the freaking scooters where I'm like, oh, that'd be so awesome. It'd be so funny if I got that.
Like that, yeah. I'm going to get hurt and I'm going to go home. Like instead of nowadays, it's like if I get hurt, I'm going to try to own this place, you know, afterward. Mm-hmm. You know, there is something that's, I think those days are kind of gone and they're only getting worse. So.
That would be a weirdly cool kind of odd Willy Wonka kind of story where somebody brings back Action Park and some kid gets like injured and is like, yes, this is mine. But now he has to run the most dangerous park in the universe.
That's pretty good. That's another great. That's like Space Jail. That's another good idea.
Oh, yeah.
We'll file. Yeah.
Copyright pending.
Yes, yes.
Nobody make a Space Jail, okay?
Yeah.
But, no, Moon Jail it was.
Oh, Moon Jail. Yeah. Moon Jail. Yeah.
Don't take either. We might need a sequel. Mm-hmm. So it starts on the moon, then we're going further in outer space. For
we also need multiple pitch ideas to get one of them to land. So we'll take space jail, moon jail.
Yeah, I think we're just going into a meeting and just saying the phrase and pray that's enough. When they're like, well, tell us about it. We're like, oh, you wanted that.
You ever hear of a jail on the moon?
On the moon?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, what's it about? I don't know, but we got like a dude from The Office and we got some 80s action stars in there. They're probably going to have fight scenes.
Yeah, we got the big guy from The Green Mile. Yeah, I know he's dead, but we got him.
Yeah, we got the CGI and all that. That'll be cool.
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
This last weekend, I think it was probably the first night I spent away from the baby, and I went with a bunch of guy friends to the Catskills to an Oktoberfest. I've been there a bunch of times.
Ooh.
And, you know, it's basically essentially like, you know, I took my father and whatnot. It's basically like we eat like cheese and dried meats and have a beer tasting. But so we have a beer tasting, and the beer tasting, everybody brings like 12-13% stouts, right? And there's like, there's probably 15 of them. And, you know, you pour it around in everyone's glass and we rate them and we always pick like the winning beer or whatever. But, you know, you're drinking, even if you're drinking like a quarter of a glass every time and you're doing 15 of them, you know, you're basically drinking like four or five, you know, big beer. So, you know, and it's in the middle of the day. So, you know, obviously it leads to kind of like get a little bit bombed up. And it's on this old kind of campgroundy kind of place, like almost like an old German resort. There's not many places like it anymore. And you get your meals included, and, you know, the night comes, and we're having a fire, and they're like, hey, you want to go to the bar? And there's a bar on the camp facility, and I tell my father, I'm like, yeah, we're going to go to the bar. He's like, oh, why are you going to leave the play? And I'm like, no, there's a bar here. And he could not comprehend that there was a bar. I'm like, Dad, there's a bar here. And he's like, get out of here, because he's been a couple times, and we've never gone. And so I'm like, come on, we're going to the bar. We all go to the bar. And, you know, everyone's got like that buzz, drunk bravado, like, yeah, let's do, buy you this drink. You know, everyone's buying each other drinks, and there's karaoke there. And my one friend's like, you won't sing karaoke. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm like, he's like, I'll give you $20. I'm like, dude, no problem. I said, not only will I sing karaoke, I said, I will try to get this whole entire room involved in my song for karaoke. And he's like, get out of here. Like, he doesn't know me super well. Like, anyone who knows me, like, I don't know, if I have a couple drinks and I'm just having a good time, with, if I feel comfortable, I'll do whatever.
Okay.
So, sure enough, hands me the $20 bill. I go right to the DJ. I'm like, give me What I Got by Sublime. And sure enough, he calls, here comes Scott. Now, there's people, it's a pretty raucous crowd for a campground bar. Mm. Like, it's
campground, German resort bar, which your father still doesn't understand how is at a resort.
Yeah. And, you know, people are singing along, and I'm like, look, the crowd's already there. So What I Got comes on, and I decide to, like, sing the first verse, blah, 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 blah. You know, early in the morning, right? I'm sure I haven't seen, there's videos of it. If I find one, maybe I'll post it. But I sing it. But when it gets to the What I Got version, I just run out to the crowd and I start shoving microphones in people's face. I'm like, loving. And I go to the next person. They'd be like, What I Got. And then I run over to the next person all the way over to the other side of the, I go, loving is what I got. Like, just running around the bar like a maniac. And, you know, so, I won $20. And then he's like, then the other guy comes over and he's like, dude, I want to do a song. So then I did another song. I did Weezer Say It Ain't So, and we did it as a duet.
Ooh.
But my whole point here was, like, I understand why, you know, like when you were younger and you went to like a bar and you saw karaoke, and a lot of times you saw like middle-aged adults doing it and you're like, this is so lame. Mm-hmm. I understand now why they did it. It's just some like weird release, like I'm just gonna have fun and not I think the, like when people go up in karaoke and absolutely like kill it. Oh, by the way, I forgot the whole second verse of what I got. Apparently, I was just going, "Loving is what I got" through the whole second verse of the song. but you know, but a little bit of alcohol and karaoke, like I understand why middle-aged people love it. Like I really get it because it's just like you're gonna go up and like when like I was saying when people go up and they kill it and they're like almost prepared, like you can tell they've been singing the song and they actually have talent. It's like, eh, you just wanted to show off your voice. But when like some bozo like myself goes up and is just like sloppily singing and just being having fun, I totally get it now. And I like had this clarity moment. I'm like, now I like want to go do karaoke with my friends.
I was about to ask you, like, when you're doing your song, are you trying to do a, like, one for one? This is what Weezer sounds like. Are you trying to, like, I'm bringing a rock edge to it? Or are you just literally, like, just screaming off pitch?
I guess I'm going for more, like a wedding vibe. You know, I'm trying to sing it relatively well. But I'm not going for like I'm not trying to hit notes. I'm just going like like Weezer, say it ain't so, and just like I guess I'm going for more emotion than tone than pitch and tone.
But like what is your career like karaoke wise? Is this
not much?
Like not much.
A little bit. We used to go to karaoke with a group of friends of mine and my friend's wife Jackie, who I've known since second grade. We would always do a duet of Love Fool by the Cardigans.
Ooh.
So we would go, dear, dear, Louis, oh, that's another thing. I'm notorious for not knowing the words of any songs that I've listened to for 20 years. I know the, say it and so.
You know the hook.
Yeah, but and then I go, heartbreaker. Like I'm notorious for so when I watch these videos back, it's probably gonna be me be like, loving is what I got, and then I ain't got no Dalmatian, you know, like
right.
I would say like some of my favorite bands who we've had on the show, like Thrice, Coheed Cambria, a bunch of them. I probably still don't know 75% of the words, and I've been listening for 20 years. Like, oh, yeah. I'm terrible.
I'm atrocious with lyrics, and like I'm the one like somebody will like quote it like as we're talking. I'll just stare at them. They're like, you know, Pearl Jam. Yeah,
yeah. You know, like Let It Be.
His name was Jeremy. What?
Let It Be. You're like, I'm not a big Metallica fan.
No. Now, did this bar have like the screen with the lyrics?
Mm-hmm.
And yes. You just straight out said, nah.
Because I ran out in front of the screen, and then all of a sudden, I like looking back is not a great way to try to sing.
That'd be great, and all you're just in the crowd, the hook's going, it's like, oh crap, second verse, you just got to sprint up on stage. Let me get my reading glasses on.
Honestly, not far off from what happened. Well, like, that's probably why I missed the whole... the whole verse of Sublime, but like I said, I guess I kind of get these like silly things like why people like bowling. Like you can go have some beers with your friends and just be terrible at it and still have a good time.
Unless you're Second Arrow, I'm sure he's amazing.
He's good. Yeah, I don't know, playing darts. Like I understand now. Like you know, like I guess the lawn games, like the cornhole and the bottle bash and the, you know, all those things, I understood because, like, you could still be young and have a beer with it. But I get that vibe more and more and more as I'm getting older. Like, the sports or the activities that you can be terrible at and still have a good time, like, that's the way to go.
I mean, I think that is words to live by, because there's nothing worse than going out to do something like friendly and that one friend is destroying the amazing.
Yeah.
Like, you go to karaoke, and it's like, I never knew Tim was an opera singer.
That's what I'm saying. The people who are great at karaoke, those are singers. That's not karaoke.
Mm.
Yeah. Like, my one friend, Walter, he lives here, like, right in the neighborhood. And after volleyball, we played in volleyball league together. We would always go to this one little bar to get a drink after the game, and they would have live karaoke where there was a band. And you would, like, you sing with the band. And he would always sing Man in the Box by Alice in Chains.
Okay.
And he was a good singer. But I'm always like, why did... And he would get drunker and drunker and, like, do Man in the Box twice sometime. It's all getting very clear to me now, I guess, as I'm getting older, like, why he does that. Because he's just having an absolute blast while he's doing it. That's it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And once, like, you drop that, like, give a shit what I sound like or what people think, that's the best feeling in the world, because you're just having a good time.
Like, I couldn't imagine going up to him and, like, no, you did that. Do Foo Fighters now. He'd be all pissed off. And go, hello. Waiting here for you.
God damn it. I'm the man. Be great to hear him sing it over the music that's not.
I requested this song to put something else on, and I don't care.
Sir, this is Margaritaville by Jimmy Buffett. I don't understand.
Wasted away again with the man in the box.
Bury me in shit.
But... Aruba, Jamaica, the man in the box.
Yeah. But I don't know. I guess it was like a moment of clarity for me. Not clarity the night of, but clarity the day after when I'm analyzing, oh, man, what did I do last night? But have you ever tried karaoke?
I have not.
I feel like you would excited. Like it now. I feel like the mic, we were talking about old Mike. I feel like old Mike would never do it. I feel like new Mike wouldn't give a crap. If you don't give a crap about taking pictures and dressing up in dog outfits, I feel like you would really enjoy singing the freshman at karaoke.
Yeah. I might do that Steal My Sunshine song. Like, I was when we were driving back from Georgia, it popped on, and I'm like, I don't know why I keep on going back to this song, but I'll keep on hitting that skip button on my series and going back to it.
Steal my sunshine. That's a bad song, but it would be a great karaoke song. That's what makes it fun.
Exactly.
Yeah, like, people are picking, like, Lady Gaga songs and singing them, like, to a T. I'm like, okay, cool. She did that already. Watch my version of Sublime where we forget half the song.
That's definitely more fun. Like, if they did it perfect, I'd be like, I'm going to find a way to get Lady Gaga into here and blow your... Make her sing a song, and then be like, it's your turn, Joan. Follow that up.
But
now you know how we feel.
But anyway, our little verbal karaoke has come to an end tonight. Mike, anything to promote?
I will just promote my thing, Pumpkin Spice Whatever, on Facebook. Has some technical issues, but getting up some episodes. Did the first live one tonight. I'll be getting up all the ones from Disney up there. 31 days, everything pumpkin, here with my lovely wife, and I'll just lay back having fun, having a little chit chat as we review pumpkin spice items all month long on facebook.com/theburrows721. Look up pumpkin spice whatever.
I will quickly promote a good friend of ours, Mike Salona, funny comic. He has a new podcast coming out called Mike's Mike. And Mike, as in the name Mike, and Mike, M-I-C. So he just put out his first episode. He's a very funny comic. He's also on the next Verbal Shenanigans comedy show. So go check out Mike's Mike, new podcast in the market. Guys, that's it. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind. I almost forgot our outro there. I forget the words to songs. I forget our own outro. Life is funny.
The next time you go out on karaoke, you'd be like, life is funny. Keep the wind at your back. Good night, everybody.
And I couldn't have done.
I guess you would. I would have to be in the crowd and say something silly after the words.
Well, there you go. I couldn't have done it any better. Peace, guys.